It's 9:44. The board has just returned from executive session. We will begin again with a roll call of board members and staff to make sure all have returned. Dr. Bastillo.
Here.
Dr. King.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
Dr. Hike.
Here.
Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson is still absent. Ms. Sinish.
Here.
My name is Judy Chepius, and we are also joined with our Assistant Attorney General, Mark Harris. Dr. Bastillo, the meeting is yours.
Okay, we're just returning from executive session regarding case 2231, Gaurav Kanal, PT. I do have a question before we begin discussion for Dr. Kanal. What is your current work situation and what are your plans?
Dr. Kanal, if you're in attendance and speaking, you're muted. We can't hear you.
He just indicated that he is not able to unmute himself. I don't know if Judy's able to do that.
I don't have that ability. He can exit and
I think we just heard him.
Oh,
yeah. Hi, are you guys able to hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So right now I've just been kind of doing whatever I can to be able to make ends meet, just doing like side gigs and stuff like that, considering doing Uber. I'm not doing any kind of physical therapy or anything like that.
And you have not done physical therapy since all this started last year?
I haven't done physical therapy since after the not since like the complaint got filed, but a little bit after that, I stopped doing physical therapy. After I think like the first time I spoke with Mindy.
Okay. And are your plans still to move forward with opening a group home?
So that's been delayed because it's not only me, it's other people that are involved in it too, and it's kind of just been unorganized and up in the air, so I'm not sure with that.
Okay.
Dr. Kanal, do you plan to practice as a physical therapist again?
Yes, that was my hope and plan.
And what would that look like? Like in what setting?
So I think
part-time, what?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, what I think would be the most helpful for me would be to be able to do it in the home health settings, but to be able to kind of what me and Flynn discussed and kind of what he told you guys, to have guardrails up so that way I could have better guidance, a pair of second eyes to be able to kind of guide me and things of that nature. And I also wanted to see if I would be able to do it, where I'm not seeing so many patients at once, where I'm only seeing a little bit. And then that way I'm able to focus on those patients and to be able to focus on the paperwork and the documentation. And also like kind of what Flynn said, to be able to see those patients through, so I can see them from the beginning of care to the end of their care. And get a better picture of what that looks like and all the steps before I'm like supervising anybody.
Curious, given the variety of different practice settings that you could practice in with a mentor right there with you, why would you choose home health where you're really autonomous again?
So the reason I would do that is because, you know, I feel that going into another setting wouldn't really mimic, it's like the law of specificity, I guess, but it wouldn't mimic actually being able to practice well in home health. And that's kind of where my where my deficiencies were. So I think that to be able to help that, I would have to practice in a setting that's at least similar to home health, because orthopedic, I think, is different. And I think that even the documentation is different. Like when I did it for a clinical rotation, it was completely different than kind of home health. So I think that doing that wouldn't really, it would be great, but it wouldn't really kind of fill up the holes in the deficiencies that I currently have, if that makes sense.
Is your hope to be able to provide physical therapy services to patients in your group home?
So, I don't have a group home. No. That was
Okay. So when you open a group home, you would like to be the practitioner.
I don't necessarily think so. I mean, I haven't even thought that far ahead, to be honest. I know that in the group homes, people do get physical therapy services. It wouldn't have to be necessarily from me. It could be from somebody else. But like I said, I mean, the group home is something that hasn't really had any development or anything like that.
Thank you.
Just a quick question about the time that the complaint occurred. So it wasn't clear in the recording. Were you just working for one company, or were you actually working for more than one company?
So I was working for more than one company.
So you mentioned the idea. No, go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No. Give me a guess. You're working for who was it that you were working for?
So at the time of the complaint, I was working for Home Sweet Home Care, and I was working for, I believe, A&B.
And those are both home health, two home health companies, just to be clear?
Correct.
Okay, and so, but you said to be able to focus on your documentation, you were working for two home health companies at the time that the complaint came across. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. At the time, I wasn't aware that, you know, I mean, all this stuff hadn't really unfolded. So after the conversation with the board, when I was able to talk to the board, that's when I had a better idea of the severity of what had happened. And, I was more aware of it. And then, so that's when I just stopped, because I didn't want to do anything incorrectly after that. Getting this resolved.
Gotcha. And so you said you wanted to be able to focus on the documentation and the patients you were seeing. But yeah, you were working for two companies. How many days a week were you doing, or were you seeing patients in the one setting versus the other setting, both home health companies?
So it was still like 4 or 5 days a week. I think the total amount of patients I was seeing was to a full-time load. It wasn't like I was doing two full-time jobs. It was, I don't know if you guys can skip hear me, but it was two part-time jobs essentially.
Okay. And the one company, in terms of the interview, Carrie Holcomb was interviewed, and I believe he was suggesting that you were very particular about the places that you would go, in terms of, so if you're working two part-time jobs, seems like there could be some overlap between those two companies in what they would ask you to do. And that might be a reason to be particular about choosing where you're going to see those patients. Is that, you know, why you're doing that, or was there a reason for that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I just wanted to be able to, you know, I mean, you spend a lot of time driving in home health, and then in the summers, right, it can get really hot and stuff like that. So I wanted to basically minimize that drive time as much as possible if I could. So I was just trying to, you know, I was already in a certain area, so I was really only wanted to take patients in a certain area, because one of the companies was based out of the west side, and I was kind of seeing patients on the east side. So I kind of told them, hey, I can help you with this one, because this, the east side, because I'm already there, versus, you know, trying to drive across, because Phoenix is so sprawling, to drive across that would just be, you know, kind of hard to do and manage everything.
And if I remember as well in the interview, there was a suggestion that you were leaving the one practice because you were starting a group home and you were going to start your own business. And I think that's part of the questions that were being asked already. So you
yeah, so
change your mind or?
I'm so sorry, go ahead. Well, I just wanted to make, like, after, you know, when you had the complaint and stuff, I hadn't really had a chance to talk to the board. And so when I had told, you know, that the company that I was going to start a group home, it was after the complaint, but it was really before I had a chance to talk with Mindy and the board and kind of understand everything on a deeper level. And that was kind of before, you know, me and Flynn were really involved in the whole process. It was kind of minimal before that because it was just that first meeting we were waiting for. But then after that first meeting, you know, I really thought about, hey, this, like, there's a lot of deficiency. There's a lot of knowledge that I don't have. So I didn't want to go and do stuff. And then also, you know, like I said, with the group home, it's not only me starting it. There's several other people involved. So it's organizing with them and getting everything with them and their schedules and all that. So it hasn't been anything that, you know, has developed in that kind of way. So yeah, that's kind of, I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Canal, it's been a few months now that you've not worked as a PT. Have you done anything to help improve your education in the areas that you feel like you've lacked?
Yeah, I mean, I took extra continuing education courses. I tried learning, you know, online to see if there were certain, you know, practice standards within the realm of home health. Like not practice standards, but documentation standards, things like that within the realm of home health. I think I've gotten a bit of a better understanding on it, but I think, you know, I think the best would be to be able to have, like kind of what Flynn, you know, noted to was to be able to have someone to be able to look over my notes and kind of make those corrections in real time or in real life, you know, because a lot of this education stuff, it is helpful, and I think it's gotten me a better idea of stuff, but it's still mostly more theory in part, and so being able to apply it to the practice would, I think, be a lot more helpful.
What have you taken specifically?
I took some courses on, like, documentation in the home health team.
How many hours?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Dr. Canal, question. Why the shift from, it sounds like you guys were negotiating consent agreement terms, there were a couple of different versions, and then suddenly there was a big shift in what you were willing to or wanted to talk about. Why the shift over the last couple of weeks in your focus and your direction?
Well, you know, I looked at a lot of, I kind of looked at it, and that's, I think I processed things a little bit slower in certain areas. And, you know, after look, and honestly, in the beginning, it was kind of a shock. Like, this whole thing was a shock. So, you know, it was a lot of going through emotions. I wasn't really being able to think clearly, to be honest with you. It affected my mental health, you know, even my physical health a little bit. Like, so it was emotional. So, you know, after I kind of was able to go through those emotions and be able to think with a bit of a clearer mind, that's when I started thinking about it.
Dr. Canal, what settings did you do your clinical education in at NAU?
So I did my clinical education in skilled nursing, and then I did it in skilled nursing and two orthopedic outpatient clinics.
Okay. And you had the documents in each of those sections, those areas, right? And you had your clinical instructor looking over your documentation.
Correct.
I'm just really struggling with how it got so significantly lacking in detail between moving from a clinical student, and you've been out for since 2020, so it's not really like you're a super new grad. So how did it move from passing all those clinical education courses and working for a few years to suddenly your documentation was missing significant pieces?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, in the clinical rotations for those practices, the way I was documenting, like in orthopedics, it's honestly, it was a lot less detailed that, and that's kind of what I use for home health. But I think I'm starting to realize that for home health, it needs to be, I think, more detailed than that. Because even for orthopedic, I mean, the way I was documenting, it was really similar. And I know it was a couple of years out until this happened, but I think that I was documenting and I wasn't doing it to the standard of home health. And I just wasn't aware of it until this whole thing kind of happened and we had the conversation.
Yeah, this whole case really, really bothers me. And the fact that we're here, you know, months after an initial, consent agreement was offered is even more unsettling to me, even though Mr. Canal is not currently practicing. It's not even just the level of detail that's the issue. It's pre-populating a documentation note and then submitting it.
And signing it.
And not only your signature, but then signing a patient's signature. And I think the probably the one that's the hardest for me is the new patient evaluation that was done, submitted, and turned in as if it was done on a patient that was not seen. And I am having a very hard time getting past it.
Dr. Pasillo, I agree with you 100%. Mm-hmm. This isn't, I can be really understanding on mistakes, and mistakes sometimes happen, but this was an evaluation that was filled out and signed. And the only explanation is that the licensee did it to save time. I just don't believe that. I know the licensee wants to get rid of the fraud, but calling this anything other than attempt to defraud his employer by saying he made a visit that he didn't do, I don't see any other reasonable explanation for this.
And I'm going to return to, I listened to the entire administrative hearing, informal hearing from before, and Dr. King really said it very succinctly. I don't feel like Dr. Canal owned up to any of these things. It was just like, it just happened. It was just part of what I do. This is my practice. This is my habit. This is what I do. And I'm like, no, this is not what we do.
Yeah.
And so, I just sit here and.
And Judy, now we're here and what we're hearing is he didn't have enough training. So again, not owning it, right? Like if I had better onboarding, if I had better training in using the EMR, my documentation, I would have been a better practitioner. And I think it's the same song, second verse, for me. I listened to everything. I read every single document, all the investigative reports, and nothing for me has changed. I do not believe we got this wrong, in any way, shape or form, findings of facts or conclusions of law. And quite honestly, some of the examples that we were given in the letter from the attorney just even further validated that for me, that those other cases were very similar and the conclusions of law around misleading or billing were substantiated. And so was this. And so I don't think we got this wrong as far as the findings of fact and conclusions of law. Now, if you want to talk about terms and the consent agreement, we can just discuss that. But as far as removing any of the findings of fact and conclusions of law, I think there's ample evidence to support the substantiation of all of those.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Dr. King. I'd like to help the licensee out, but I really feel like, again, for, you know, public protection, this needs to be severely remediated. It's not a minor problem.
And Dr. Bastillo, I guess that kind of brings the issue to head. If our position is, you know, he can surrender his license and that's it, then I think we're done here. Mr. Carey and licensee can decide if they want to do that. If not, they can go forward with hearing. The question is, are we willing to provide the licensee a path forward in a consent agreement where he can, you know, earn that privilege to practice back? And, you know, I could go either way. From what I see, I don't see the licensee. I it's hard for me to say he's not that interested in his license because he is, you're here today. But, you know, I know if I think I'd be doing things differently if I wanted to continue the practice.
Right.
Well, and I think that's my concern, right? Is I'm listening to what we're hearing today, and I agree with you, Mr. Greer. I am always really, really, really hesitant to talk about taking away somebody's right to practice, especially because I'm very cognizant of the fact that essentially what we're talking about is ending this individual's career, right? And he spent a lot of time and a lot of education and a lot of energy getting here. What concerns me is I'm trying to kind of play out the world in which we establish some kind of situation where he practices safely. And I'm having a hard time getting there. I see, you know, the admissions that we got in the informal hearing were kind of, as everybody's mentioned, it was a feeling of a person who just didn't think, who thought maybe some education was missing, but wasn't really taking responsibility. The CLE that was done in between the initial complaint and the follow-up didn't seem to change the math very much. And the discussions even today about like, oh, well, you know, this documentation would have been fine in a nursing home or it would have been fine in an ortho setting. And it was just that home health was different. And when we're looking at it, it's not ever okay in any of those settings to be billing for care you're not providing or to be signing notes for patients who you're not treating or to be engaging in any kind of this really fraudulent behavior. Right. And so, I am really concerned. I'm trying to play out what kind of probation we would put together that would change that habit. And I, you know, I'd be interested in what the board thinks. And frankly, you know, I'd be interested in hearing, from the licensee and from his attorney, like, what are we supposed to do that's going to make us confident about this? As I look at it and as I kind of do this math, I'm having a real hard time getting to any kind of a situation where I look at it and go, I could be confident of this result.
Mm-hmm.
And that really concerns me. And it really is, I mean, it's tough. As I said, I really don't want to say to somebody, look, your career is over. That's hard, but I guess, Mr. Carey, help me out. Like, what provision do you think we can put on a probation that would help us with what we're seeing?
And Chair Bastia, I know you're in discussion. May I respond to Member Barton? Thank you. So Member Barton, a few things, just to kind of go back on kind of where this came from is I think the place where there may be a bit of a disconnect is I think he's very clearly accepting responsibility for these deficiencies. I mean, he has not come to the board saying there's no deficiencies, there's no problems here. I think the tail that's wagging the dog here to some extent is that your statutes have incorrect, deceptive, and fraudulent kind of all in the same statutes. And so where he, you know, fraud is a very loaded term. And I think that this is, I think where we are, at least where he is absolutely admitting deficiencies, admitting serious deviations from the standard of care in providing, in how he has documented. As for, I think the issue is fraud is a very specific term of art, and it demonstrates a lot of an active interest in committing misconduct. And I think that's where we're getting hung up. I think that he's very much admitting that the documentation did contain inaccuracies, and he definitely should not have been getting documentation prepared in advance. With all that said, I think that, you could certainly, through a combination of phasing in his ability to provide care, whether that's through a practice monitor, chart reviews, allowing him to return to home health once there's been some sort of criteria met. Although I do tend to agree with him that the only way you're going to know if he's able to do home health is with someone providing, oversight when he's doing home health. But I think a practice monitor, which is not something that you always use in these cases, even when you've substantiated a 13 or a 14, would be one way. And that practice monitor does report back to Judy or to Mindy. So it's not a situation where the practice monitor just operates on their own. If there's a serious continued deficiency, they report it. I also think, tried to identify and do some root cause analysis on how this happened. I don't think, I hope the board's not reading his discussion of some insufficiencies in training as an excuse so much as, hey, he sat with this for such an extended period now that he's identified some potential root causes. I think he would be the first to tell you it's ultimately the licensee who gets to make the decision or, do they need more care or attention before they start working in a particular area. But I think a practice monitor gets you there. I think potentially to fill in any learning gaps, the jurisprudence exam is always a good option. I think definitely we've tried to put together a package of education that really forces him to very carefully go through this. But I think a practice monitor and recommendations of the practice monitor are a way to approach this. I know that most board consent agreements, if not all, have an employer notification requirement. And what I have done with other boards is the employer report back, on a quarterly basis, is this person performing? And we have language. We just did this with another board in the last few months where we have a form now that can be used. So I think that if you put in a practice monitor and you put in some kind of employment notification, and on the back end, you're doing jurisprudence and some education, I think you hit all the target areas, you create essentially a multiple points of accountability. And I think that's how you do it. And then at that point, it's really his to lose, because then you've given him a shot. You've put real sufficient guardrails in place. And as Mark, I'm sure, will tell you, if he steps out of line on a consent agreement, you certainly have the ability to open it up as an investigation or treat it as a non-compliance event. The other thing you could do, Chair, and this is something that the veterinarian board does a lot, is they have people return to the board every quarter for a check-in. And I don't recall if your board has done it, but I know the vet board does it. So it's another option where you get to put eyes on the person. And I think this board has demonstrated that you're good about asking questions and probing a licensee. So that would be potentially another, your own way to personally hold him accountable.
Mr. Carey, I'm reading the room a little bit, and it doesn't seem that there's support to change the findings of fact and conclusions of law to strike the violation of 32, 20, 44, 13, or 14. Thank you. If that's the case, is your client not willing to accept any settlement agreement? I know that's kind of where we got off the rails with staff.
So here's what I would say, and this is more lawyer to attorney to attorney. I would need to get some informed consent on those items. What I would say, Member Greer, is, you know, Mark had offered some ways in which we can put that information in there. You know, I would need to talk to him offline about whether that would be an option. I mean, I think you could still make an offer, obviously. And if it included that, I would discuss it with him. If you also saw that we provided some alternatives, that could be an option as well. But I don't know that I can commit him on a conference call to that. I would need to give him some informed consent and attorney advice on that. I wouldn't want my need to give him informed consent, obviously, to stand in the way of any kind of offer that's made that is less than a surrender, obviously, but I'd need to talk to him.
Thank you. Dr. Bastillo, and this is just me thinking about it, and so I don't even know if this is a proposal that I'm on board with, but thinking about what we've done in other cases and, you know, where I would see something like revocation of the license, the revocation is stayed pending full compliance of terms of probation. I would want a suspension of practice until certain continuing education and ethics courses would be completed. I would require the PBI ME22 course or the Pro-B equivalent. Continuing education, 6 hours documentation, 6 hours in supervision, chart review. Once that's completed, a chart review and or practice monitor, I would start on monthly reports, retaking the jurisprudence exam. That's kind of what I'm looking at as really the bare minimum that I'm willing to consider if we were going to change our mind.
Actually, I feel, Mr. Greer, that that's a great beginning. I would like to look at practice restriction where he's working in the presence of other physical therapists for a period of time. Because I feel he needs that mentoring that he may not have gotten in the home health situation. I can see, you know, probation for maybe a period of 5 years with possibility of early termination. I know he mentioned the supervision, not being able to supervise. You know, for, you know, a period of 6 months once he returns to clinical practice.
Dr. Bastillo, I'm in agreement with both you and Mr. Greer, your suggestions. I do appreciate some practice limitation and not allowing him to practice in home health for a term until he's got supervision and mentoring. That doesn't happen in home health. I work in home health. I'm a accreditation and compliance manager from home health agency. They don't go out in twos. They don't have time or money to send two therapists to one visit. So it's going to need to be in a setting where there are other therapists present to guide him, not just in documentation, but in his practice.
Yeah.
And so I would support practice limitation of no home health until a certain period of time and some guidelines have been met, particularly some monitoring. Yeah, and then I actually like the employer notification that Mr. Carey suggested, that, you know, because they do audit their own charts, and so the employer reporting some back to us on how he's doing, I think, is a really good idea.
So that not only that, but we would require a professional monitoring service.
Yes.
Okay.
Part of that. Yes. 1,000%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 3 to 5 charts a month, you know, looking at just documentation, appropriate care, plan of care, and billing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. From evaluation to discharge.
I'm in agreement with what everybody's saying as well. I would also add, because I know Mr. Greer had mentioned 6 hours of documentation, 6 hours of ethics, but I would also add 6 hours of billing and coding into that as well.
Yeah.
Well, we have to remember he's taken a lot of that already. And he even took some before we did the additional charts. And so I do appreciate more education, but we're not seeing it applied. You know, and so I think that's where the monitor's going to come in, because he did take CEUs and he told us that, and then we requested additional charts and they were just as bad and missing significant pieces. So, and quite honestly, I would have preferred that he didn't just leave practice with this complaint. He's not had any opportunity to even shadow or practice his documentation CEUs that he's taken. He's just taken them. Right. And not applied it. And so what's that going to look like? Right. So, if it was since the complaint happened, it's been almost a year.
Right. And it's been a long time since he's been practicing. So it's almost like starting over again.
So home health wouldn't, an autonomous situation for a person who's not practiced for a year and had complaints already. For me, that's a hard no. It's not going to set him up for success in any way, shape, or form.
So is this, and Mr. Greer, maybe you can help me with this. Is this a reoffer of a consent agreement?
Well, I was going to ask Mr. Harris to help us out.
Thank you.
where I think it goes best, and Mr. Harris can correct us, is if we just instruct staff to continue the negotiations knowing what we know. Mr. Harris, do you have sufficient guidance from us on what we're doing, or do you need us to make a motion to formally extend an offer?
Mr. Greer, members of the board, I think at this point, I think it would be very helpful to be as specific as possible, because it seems to me that this is going to be the board's final offer and that it'll be up to, you know, Flynn and Mr. Canal to determine whether or not that's acceptable to Mr. Canal or go to hearing. So with that said, what I heard, and please, you know, correct me, that you would like to reoffer the latest version of the consent agreement that board staff presented to Mr. Canal with the findings of facts and conclusions of law as proposed. I know Mr. Carey indicated that there were some discussions about while citing both 13 and 14, clarifying that the board's concerns were not specifically related to the use of the word fraud in those statutes, but the other words that comprise the unprofessional conduct identified in 13 and 14. So I would need some direction on whether that would be acceptable to you. What I'm envisioning is probably dropping a footnote if that is what is the board's intent to make that clarification. And then if we could, I know we started with a stayed revocation that Mr. Canal's license would immediately be placed on probation subject to completion of, and then I would just ask you to, you know, if you could provide us with what courses you would like to see him complete prior to being able to provide physical therapy services.
So I think we got that. You know, I don't know how to be more specific, Mr. Harris, on the negotiations on 13 and 14. I do think there is a disconnect between what I think my position is and what I understand the licensee's position is. I think this was fraud. You know, I think that I don't see how we could call it anything different. This, I know the licensee says it was a mistake, but when I look at what he prepared and the signatures from the patients, you know, I just don't believe the licensee. This was a mistake. I think this is something that he got caught. He showed up to visit, and I understand the frustration. He drove out there. The patient wasn't there. And for whatever reason, probably thought he wasn't going to get caught. He filled out the evaluation, submitted it. I don't think it was a mistake. And so am I willing to massage the language? Yeah, I'll give you some authority to massage the language, but I don't think I want to give authority for calling it that it's something different than a violation of 13 and 14, because I think it was. And you know, what your footnote would look like, you know, I'm not sure, because I am more concerned about the fraud than a mistake, because I don't think it was a mistake. I think it was intentional. From the board discussion, you know, I know we got we have the things that I said. I heard Giovanni say continuing education and billing. I heard Dr. King say home health practice restriction. Anything else?
And Mr. Gurr, thank you for that. That's very helpful. Would you mind just, and Judy, maybe you have this, but could we, just so that we're all clear, I think it's very important for Mr. Carey and Mr. Canal to hear this as well. So if we could just repeat the coursework that would need to be completed before the board would return his license to active status, and he would then be subject to the other terms and conditions of probation. Can we just start
there? I'm looking, I mean, you guys can't tell, but I'm looking at the other squares on my screen to make sure I didn't miss anything. I'm planning on providing a summary of what I think.
Thank you.
What I want to see. So, did I miss anything?
We just, I think a supervision requirement, practice restriction as well.
And the way I have that written down in my notes is a restriction in home health. And then I'm not exactly sure what a practice monitor is, because I thought a practice monitor would be somebody that monitors a licensee's practice.
And I think we were using it as terminology. It may just be terminology that varies. I think the idea was some level of oversight on his charting, someone who would be facilitating chart review and essentially any other skill development that the board felt was necessary. I don't know if that's referred to as a practice monitor by your board. That's, you know, every board, some use clinical supervisor, some use practice monitor. It would essentially be someone for whom him to check in with and to review charts. Judy, do you know what the term would be for that?
Well, you have a couple of different options in that sense. You could require a supervised clinical practice period where he would have to provide a supervising physical therapist that would be supervising his practice for a period of time. That's an option that would be available to you. You could do something along the lines in addition or after, or, you know, however you want to make it work. You could do the practice monitoring, which would be the external third party, such as affiliated, that, you know, we've seen before, to do reports and, you know, pull charts and do those kind of reports. You can do any of those kinds of things. I mean, there's no limit really to the creativity that could be done.
Dr. King, I believe this was your idea. Does a supervised clinical practice period meet those needs? I think it does for me.
As long as it's not in home health, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at least
be with other therapists. Yeah.
I would say at least 6 months, or 500 hours if we want to say that way, of supervised clinical practice. But that being said, does that include an in-depth documentation review audit, or is it just watching him practice, right? Because that's two different, very different things.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
And I was going to have a chart review following the supervised clinical practice period.
Okay. So then at that point, after the 500 hours are met, then external monitoring?
Yeah.
Okay. I support that 100%.
Yep.
Okay. Are you ready, Mr. Harris?
I am. Thank you.
Okay, this is what I think. This is the Josh Greer summary of where I think the board's position is. And if you want me to make this as a motion so we can vote on it, I can.
Sure.
Okay. I would move that we offer the licensee a settlement offer for a consent agreement consistent with version 3.0, the last version that we extended, with the following discipline. Stayed, revocation of licensee's license, which will be stayed pending successful completion of probation for 5 years. A suspension of practice until the completion of the following continuing education and ethics course. The PBI ME22 or Pro-B equivalent course, continuing education, 6 hours documentation, 6 hours supervision, 6 hours billing. Upon completion of, or upon termination of the suspension, the licensee shall undertake a supervised clinical practice period for 6 months or 500 hours. Following that, the licensee will be able to practice. However, he will not be able to practice in the area of home health and will be subject to a chart review. Somewhere in there, he's got to retake the jurisprudence exam too. But I don't really care that much about the timing of that.
I would personally prefer that he takes the jurisprudence exam prior to the suspension being lifted.
I like it. So that is my motion.
Mr. Greer, would you entertain an amendment to limit his ability to supervise during his supervised clinical practice period?
Yes, I would. I don't understand enough about the practice of physical therapy to understand how necessary that is, but if you're telling me it is, I will accept
it. He can learn about it while he's there,
yeah,
but not practice it.
I second your motion, Mr. Greer, for discussion. So I'm thinking he ultimately wants to return to home health. That is where he's wanting to practice. And we're pulling him out in a supervised clinical practice, not in home health. And then we'll do monitoring. I'm hoping at some point he returns to home health, but maintains the monitor to take a look at that bridge between working in a clinic to working in home health and someone monitoring his charts. And so my preference would be that perhaps we might think about supervised clinical practice outside of home health when he returns to home health, or returning to home health after that, if he chooses to. That monitor needs to keep an eye on his practice in home health. That's where he's not succeeding. So what are your thoughts about that?
He can come back to the board before he's ready to return to home health, okay, after successful monitoring. And if he's ready to return to home health, we can ask that he retain that monitor for a period of time during his home health. Would that satisfy
Yes, I think that that's a perfect solution, because I just don't want to see him leaving an entity, right, where he's got people around him back into by himself and no one's taking a look at his charts.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If we're going to try to help him be successful, let's make sure in the setting he wants to practice in that we have eyes on until he's released, I guess.
Just for my clarity, are we saying that after the supervised clinical practice period, he's able to return to home health, or are we not allowing a return to home health for a certain time period?
My intent was to not allow the return to home health until the probation is lifted.
Okay, so 5 years or the early termination of that.
Exactly.
Got it.
So, Madam Chair, members of the board, if that was the intent of the motion, then I'm not sure, Dr. King and Dr. Bastillo, that we need to add that kind of condition, because it sounds like for the 5-year period of probation, he would not be permitted to practice in the home health setting.
Yes, correct then.
Is everybody okay with that?
I mean, after 5 years of working in another setting, if he does decide to go, I mean, who knows? Maybe he enjoys working in the setting that he goes into at that point. But I would hope that going back into the home health setting, that he will have taken advantage of all of the resources, you know, that he's gotten to that point, and not get back into that habit. So I would personally be fine with him not having, especially if the probation's ended at that point, you know, not having to report any charts back to us at that point. But if anything happens with it, I'm pretty sure we're going to see him again, and, you know, we're not going to be, you know, in the same mindset if it happens again.
So if I can just clarify then, just looking at my notes and knowing the level of detail that we need to make sure we have in this 500 hours supervised clinical practice and then moving to an external monitor. How many charts per month for how long? So I don't think we're thinking 5 years of monitoring. So how long would the monitoring, the external monitoring need to report to us? And then, you know what are we thinking?
We need 3 consecutive good reports.
Okay.
But I think the intention is, if it takes 5 years to get us 3 consecutive good reports, it might take 5 years. The hope is early termination.
Absolutely. So we could say, you know, for 5 years or until the monitoring agency provides evidence of 3 consistent reports that meet our rules and regulations for documentation.
So three months straight of good charts. And each month would be 3 charts pulled. Is that what we said?
Okay. Yes.
So just to clarify where we're standing. So modifying the current consent agreement to include a revocation that is stayed upon completion of all compliance with all of the terms, and that period is 5 years. So you want to suspend his practice until certain elements are completed. That would be he completes the PBI or probe course, continuing education of 6 hours documentation, 6 hours supervision, 6 hours billing, the jurisprudence exam. Then he is allowed to go back into practice to complete a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours within 6 months, where he is prevented from supervising any assistive personnel. And then after that, his practice is to be monitored by a clinical monitor for a period of 3 months, assuming successful completion of that monitoring, to be done on a monthly basis to monitor all of his practice. And then he can come back for potential early termination. When does the lift on the home health occur?
Termination of the probation.
Yeah, there's no mention, Judy, of the home health in this.
Okay.
He's prohibited from practicing in the home health setting.
Okay.
For the period of probation. But Judy, I don't think we said monitoring for only 3 months. I think we said three charts per month until we receive three consecutive reports from the monitoring agency that his documentation meets.
With no issues.
The standard. Mm-hmm. And no issues. So that could be, hypothetically, a couple years.
I would also recommend just changing the verbiage to documentation monitoring, because when I think practice monitoring, mm-hmm. I'm thinking there's somebody actually there with him, you know, from an outside agency monitoring his practice of, with patients in the clinic. I don't know if anybody else thinks the same thing with that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Giovanni.
Yeah, I would agree.
And not to jump in, and Judy, let me tell me if I should pause while you catch up.
Yeah, 1 second, please. Okay, go ahead, Mark.
So what I wanted to just clarify, so this is a consent agreement for probation of 5 years. Mr. Canal will be able to ask the board for early termination once the documentation monitor has submitted three consecutive reports that present with no issues, that show full compliance with the board's documentation requirements.
Correct.
And I think the final piece is that we would like this signed within 30 days or the revocation is no longer stayed.
I think it goes to a formal hearing. Would that be right, Mark? If it's not signed in 30 days, we move to formal?
That is correct. Okay. Yeah. And I don't know, you know, Mr. Carey, if there's any value, once there's a vote to maybe having a recess so that you can consult with your client and report back to the board, or if there's more time that's needed. I mean, we've spent a long time.
I think it would be best for me to get something in writing so I can review it with the client. And, Mark, I have on some of these items, if we haven't done it with this board, I have some stuff from other boards that we can maybe, I can give you some proposed language on like the, chart reviews and things like that. But I have some ideas on how we can streamline this, but I've taken pretty ample notes. I just need to review with my client and I think that'll take a little bit of time.
Thank you. I think we should recognize Judy and her efforts to memorialize this in real time.
Yes.
Thank you, Judy.
I mean, is there a time limit on the continuing education that must be completed?
He can't practice until he completes it. So
and,
it's up to him.
And takes and passes the jurisprudence.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay, well.
And I think it probably goes without saying, but just in case, the CEUs that are part of this consent agreement are don't include the ones he's already taken.
Right.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Okay. I think I have it. I'm crossing all fingers and toes. Okay, so in the case of 2231 Gaurav Kanal PT, it's been moved and seconded to modify the currently offered consent agreement to include a revocation, but issue a stay of revocation contingent on compliance with the following terms. Probation is for a period of 5 years. His practice will be suspended until completion of the PBI or Proby course, continuing education for 6 hours in documentation, 6 hours in supervision, 6 hours in billing. Those courses must be pre-approved. They may be completed online, and they do not count towards renewal requirements. He must also complete the jurisprudence exam, successfully complete the jurisprudence exam. He is then allowed to begin a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours that shall be completed within 6 months, where he is unable to supervise assistive personnel during that time frame. Early termination of this agreement may be sought after completion of all of the above terms and compliance with a clinical monitoring to occur on a monthly basis for an indefinite period that includes 3 charts per month until there are 3 consecutive months where the documentation meets the standard of practice. If this consent agreement is not signed within 30 days, the matter will be remanded to formal hearing.
I may have missed it, but was there mention of not being allowed to practice in home health until probation is done?
Nope. Let's put that in there. Okay. I've just added that. Would you like me to reread it all again?
Maybe just that statement.
Okay. So a practice restriction, the respondent may not practice in home health until successful termination of probation following compliance with all terms.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we believe that's sufficient?
I think so.
Okay. All right. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck with everything, Mr. Cano.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
So how about a little bit of a break before we finish up here?
Yes, thank you.
What, a 10-minute break?
Yeah, 11 o'clock, return at 11.
That sounds good.
Great, thank you.
The recording will end at 10:49. The board will return at 11 o'clock.